Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. We are exploring the issues that impact our community. We are providing an in-depth analysis of the latest national discussion and hitting the issues hard in a thoughtful, passionate, and provocative way. We have another thought-provoking show for you this morning. Former Florida A&M football player Jonathan Farrell was gunned down in a hail of bullets by Charlotte Mecklenburg police officer Randall Carrick in the early morning of September 24th. Farrell's family, community activists, and a host of others have been demanding justice after reviewing tape from a dashboard video camera mounted in the vehicle of responding officers. Police Chief Rodney Monroe even filed charges against Officer Carrick. Early this week, a grand jury of 12 declined to indict the officer and made a written request to the prosecutor for the Attorney General to submit a lesser charge. We're going to talk about this case this morning here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
As I've indicated early this week, a grand jury impaneled to decide if Charlotte Mecklenburg police officer Randall Carrick would face trial for the shooting death of 24-year-old Jonathan Farrell. They declined to indict the officer. Now, Officer Carrick is white and is or was the least experienced officer who responded to the scene. Farrell is black. Now, as expected, many people in the community, especially the family of Farrell, are not only disappointed by the grand jury's decision, they're outraged. I'm outraged. And if there is an ounce of decency or humanity in your heart, you ought to be outraged. Now, it appears that the state attorney, the attorney general, prosecutor, whomever, will resubmit the case to a full grand jury sometime next week. But I want to ask a very important question, and I think I want you to wrestle with this question as well. And I know there might be some blowback with regard to this show, but we have to ask these questions. We have to grapple with this kind of situation. The question is, when is the life of a black man going to be respected and valued in this country? Wrestle with that for a moment. When will we ever see the day that justice is served when innocent black men are gunned down unjustifiably by the police? When will that day occur? Now, let me rattle off this disclaimer, because I know, again, we're going to face some blowback. Folks are going to criticize, but I simply don't care about that at this moment. Care about what is going on here. Not all police officers are bad. Not all police officers are bigots and mask a seething hatred for African American men. No, that simply isn't true. Not all police officers set out during their shifts to hunt down young black men. And that's not what we're saying. And I want to say this. I have friends and family members who are police officers. Some of my officer friends are black. Some of them are white, Hispanic. Some of my officer friends are female and other categories. And I sympathize with some of the things that they grapple with when they don their uniforms and don their guns and set out to patrol neighborhoods and do great policing work. So I understand that. I sympathize with that. But just as there are bigots and people that harbor prejudice and stereotypes in other professions, especially in positions of power, the police department, regardless of city, regardless of state, have amongst their ranks officers who are mired in their own prejudices and stereotypes. That is simply true. There's not a police department. There's not a corporation, a business firm, government agency, or private enterprise in this country immune from having in their ranks individuals that hold some type of prejudice or stereotypical prejudgments against other folks of other races, of other genders, sexual orientation. That is simply true. And this is precisely why there are laws on the books to address these issues when public, when folks from the public or individuals are at risk. This is why we have laws on the book, because we know instinctively that there are people who carry certain types of prejudice in their hearts. That is simply the truth. That is life. Now, having said that, this young man, Jonathan Farrell, drove a friend home on the night of September 24th. He apparently drove on a dark road where he wrecked his car. He apparently was hurt, apparently bruised from the accident. He sought help from a nearby homeowner who assumed a burglar was allegedly banging on the door. Now, this is 2 o'clock in the morning, and we certainly can sympathize with an individual. They hear a knock at the door. There is some concerns. But I will venture to guess that peering outside of that window, seeing a black man at 2 o'clock in the morning, there was a certain stereotype that emerged in that homeowner's mind. But that's a story for another day. The woman dialed 911 and the police were dispatched. 4 police officers, including Carrick, arrived in the area, spotted Jonathan Farrell. According to reports and even the dashboard video camera, apparently Jonathan Farrell indicated, at least nonverbally, that he didn't have a weapon and perhaps was trying to indicate that he needed help. According to reports, police say they told Farrell to stop because he apparently was coming towards them. Don't know if that is true. Certainly a video will bear that out. Farrell, who was unarmed, hurt from the accident, seeking help perhaps from the police, may have. Again, I didn't see the video, so I don't know. But he may have misunderstood the police demands. Who knows? We do know that he was not carrying a weapon. We do know that he was unarmed. We do know that he was an innocent man who was in a car wreck. We do know that he was seeking help. And when the police arrived, he may have had in his mind that these officers who are tasked with the responsibility to protect and serve, we do know that he may have been seeking help from them when he saw these officers. There's my help. The homeowner didn't respond because she was scared. So here's the police. They are tasked with protecting and serving. So maybe I can get help from them. Carrick, the only officer of the 4 who arrived to the scene, opened fire. Firing 12 shots, 10 of which hits Farrell 10 times. Let that sink in for a minute. An innocent man trying to find help from the police is shot at 12 times, 10 hitting his body, all because he has a darker hue. Now, yes, the homeowner may have misunderstood the situation and called the police out of fear, but it is the police's responsibility to ferret through the confusion and to determine what is going on, not to fire off shots and kill an innocent man. Now, interestingly, according to Farrell's family attorney, several of those shots were fired at a range where they certainly could determine that the man was not armed and not posing a threat to police. We know that. And what outrages the family, what outrages me, what outrages the community, the dashboard cam apparently shows that Farrell posed no threat to police. I wonder what the jury saw, the grand jury saw, during their secret meeting when they were deciding to decline to indict this man. Wonder what they saw. Did they see the video? There were no physical or verbal gestures on Farrell's part to suggest the threat, according to the attorney who viewed the tape. The video, folks, was enough for Police Chief Rodney Monroe to file charges against Officer Carrick for excessive force. We know that to be true. Additionally, this is what stirs my ire. It's not clear if the grand jury even saw the video. And if they had, family, what possible explanation could they have for not indicting this guy? The video has yet to be released to the public. We know that. But again, as I understand it, the attorneys representing the family has seen the video and are adamant that it shows Farrell unarmed, not posing a threat to police, possibly with his hands raised or in pleading for help, shows how he was shot in a hail of bullets, that he was apparently shot while down or on his way down, whatever, that as he lay on the ground bleeding and dying, the police handcuffed him, exasperating the pain. That we do know. I'm sorry, it just bothers me. Folks, this is an outrage. This is sickening. And I'm tired of black men being gunned down by the police. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by gang members. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by themselves in this so-called black-on-black crime. I am tired of it. And while I'm on the issue of black-on-black crime, because we can expect to hear this issue, particularly from conservative radio, particularly from folks who have no appreciation for the constant threat and fear experienced by black men when we leave our homes. I don't want any of you to conflate black on black crime with the myriad of instances in our community of police gunning down black men. When a cop shoots and kills an innocent black man, it doesn't negate our responsibility to hold that officer and the system that allows these shootings to continue accountable, because we continue to grapple with black on black crime. We're capable of doing both, because in the end, folks, the thug that shoots and maims in our community will eventually get caught. That person will eventually serve time. But the likelihood of a white cop serving time for the same egregious behaviors is almost non-existent. And we know it to be true. All of us, from time immemorial, we have been dealing with this issue. So for me, we're more than capable of addressing the injustices inflicted on our community and fighting our own ratchet and despicable behaviors. We can do both. And I hear all the time, white folks say, what about black on black crime? Clean up your own backyard before you start complaining about police brutality and white cops and so on and so forth. Why are they marching and rallying when gangs are shooting and killing? First of all, there's always mobilization efforts in our community to stop the violence. There's always efforts to deal with the kind of nonsense that we see on a daily basis in our community. And for me, that is a specious argument advanced by people who either don't care or have no real appreciation for the pain that we experience when these issues arise. and we are addressing issues of violence in our community. The work we do in encouraging our young folks to lead respectable lives is cleaning our own community, cleaning up our own backyard, our bevy of mentorship programs, leadership academies, recreational and youth activities, the countless partnerships with major corporations to bring jobs to the community and underwrite a host of academic sports and arts programs is cleaning our own community, cleaning our own backyard, and dealing with the issues of violence in our community. There are a bevy of different things that we are doing to address these kinds of issues. And I get tired of people minimizing the valiant efforts of so many groups and organizations or individuals who are making a difference in our community. Just to avoid having to address the injustices we see in our society. We can do both, folks. We can speak with great authority without sounding hypocritical. We can speak with credibility because many of us are doing the work of cleaning our own backyard. I've never bought into the argument that we can't fight injustice because of so-called black-on-black crime and because some knuckleheads among us choose a life of crime. We can do both. And as I've said, at the end of the day, those knuckleheads will eventually pay the piper. And we can simultaneously fight against systems of injustice and deal with black-on-black crime in our community. What we need to do is scrutinize unfair systems and bring parity and balance to the criminal justice system. And we can condemn officers that deserve condemnation while we're fighting crime in our community. We read a piece from the Charlotte Observer, an article addressing this issue. Steve Ward, a retired prosecutor who worked for 25 years under former District Attorney Peter Gilchrist, said he's never heard of a grand jury requesting a lesser charge. Grand juries meet in private. Attorneys on either side are not permitted to attend in the Carrick case. The evidence was presented by Charlotte-Mecklenburg police investigator Edwin Morales and Scott Williams of the State Bureau of Investigation. The fact that the jury chose not to indict is extremely rare, Ward said. Of the thousands of cases his office sent to a grand jury every year, only a few came back without indictments, he said, quote, I'm talking about less than 10 a year. The fact that this jury took a near unprecedented step of asking for a lesser charge is troublesome to me. It's troublesome to a whole lot of folks. And obviously, we're not we weren't in the room to determine what discussion took place for them to arrive at the conclusion that a lesser charge is warranted in this case. And because it's behind closed doors and it's a secret process, we don't know what was in their thinking, nor do we know if they were familiar with the near unprecedented rarity of this kind of request. It's not up to them, folks, to decide if Officer Kirk is innocent or if he's guilty. They are tasked with whether this was probable cause to send this to a jury trial. And folks, let's be clear about something. If the dashboard video is as the family attorney has indicated, this smacks of an agenda, particularly and especially if that video was seen by the jury and they ignored what could possibly be damaging evidence in this case. If they didn't see this, then there is malfeasance on the part of the presenters of fact. If they saw it, then I am simply flabbergasted that they would return without an indictment. For me, it's not merely a perhaps poor performance of the presentation by the DA, but a refusal to see the blatant, unjustified killing of another black man. The man was unarmed. The man was in a car wreck. The man was desperate for help. And he was shot down like a dog. This cop's negligence requires prosecution. This cop's killing of an innocent man who was only seeking help requires jail time. And again, I want to be clear. I'm not saying Officer Carrick is a homicidal, racist cop who sought out to kill a black man. No, that's not what I am saying. But there's something sick, something sinister about shooting an innocent man 10 times, several shots allegedly fired when Farrell was falling to the ground. There's something sick and demented about that. And then you add insult to injury, a jury seeking lesser charges? That is astounding to me. Read this. Carrick's attorney, Lauren, called the decision a victory for all police. Quote, "The citizens of Mecklenburg County have spoken," he said. "I think they sent a message to all law enforcement officers that they'll stand behind them when they use absolute force when it is justified." I watched Carrick's attorney give a statement to reporters the other day after the grand jury gave its decision, and he, in my judgment, was arrogantly gleeful and smug. I'm going to put that out there. And what's more insulting to me is the notion that the killing of an innocent man who may have been just pleading for help and assistance after wrecking his car. I'm insulted that this man would suggest that this was justified. You know, since the late 80s and early 90s, police killing of young black men and police brutality has been an issue that has resonated with me. I was involved in dozens upon dozens of protests and demonstrations led by the Reverend Al Sharpton when I was home in Jersey. I would drive up to Harlem, which was only an hour away from my Jersey Shore home, to participate in Sharpton's rallies and demonstrations. And it was during those moments that I realized that this type of tragedy wasn't exclusive to places like New York City or the East Coast or the West Coast. It could happen anywhere in our country. It could happen to me. It could happen to the folks that I love. And as a black man, as a father of two sons, as an uncle of several nephews, this is an issue I and so many black men in this country worry about on a daily basis. This is our daily struggle, folks, particularly, and I'm addressing white folks who just cannot sympathize or appreciate what black men have to deal with in this country. We deal with this on a daily basis. Anytime we walk out the door, there's a profoundly tangible concern about a negative interaction with the police department, with police officers. White folks don't grapple with these fears and concerns. This is real to us. This is not an imagined fear. It's based on years of experience, harrowing events that have plagued our communities for many, many, many years. I've seen it. And it's not a crippling feeling that would prevent me or any others from leaving the home. But there is trepidation about walking out that door, knowing that some crazy interaction with the police could result in a situation like this. I want you to know something. Yeah, here's an interesting thing. I've been in martial arts since I was 13. I'm really good at what I do. And at night, I train in my garage. But there are times where I would train at the basketball court in my subdivision. And sometimes it's pitch black at night. But I like to train and perform kata under the moonlight. It's something that I enjoy doing. But there are times, folks, when I have an expressed concern about being stopped by the police in my own neighborhood where I pay my mortgage. There's an expressed, a tangible fear It's not a really great fear, but it's always there. It's always seething beneath the surface. And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't. I should not have to walk around having those kinds of fears. Black men in this country ought not have to grapple with these kinds of fears. About to close, but I want to say this. I'm tired, folks, of having to accommodate the irrational fears and anxiety of police officers. I've heard the excuses time and again. The officer feared for his life, yada, yada, yada. And you know what? I know it sounds like I'm minimizing what officers deal with, but I'm not. I'm certainly sympathetic to the extraordinary job police officers do on a daily basis. Crime is bad in this country in many areas. These officers put their lives on the line every day. They face an uphill battle trying to bring down crime and to maintain working relationships with various communities. But there comes a time, people, when the police have to hold their own accountable, as we've seen with Police Chief Rodney Monroe, holding them accountable. There comes a time where the community has to hold police officers accountable, especially where innocent people are the victims of brutality or unjustified shootings. We are tired of this stuff. This was a despicable, cowardly act. I don't know Randall Carrick from a hole in the wall, admittedly. But I do know that an innocent man is in his grave as a result of his either negligence or some presupposed prejudice, whatever the case may be. Police officer Randall Carrick should be indicted, folks. Not on any lesser charges, but for voluntary manslaughter. Jonathan Farrell was an innocent man seeking help after a car wreck. Jonathan Farrell deserves justice. Jonathan Farrell's family deserves justice. Our community deserves justice. And as I said at the top of the show, a new grand jury will be impaneled next week, and the attorney general will present a new case, whether it's for voluntary manslaughter or a lesser charge. Prayerfully, a new grand jury will see beyond their own biases and agenda and see that an innocent man seeking help from the police and being shot down as if he's some mannequin for target practice, that is probable cause for trial. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. We're going to continue to watch the developments in the case against Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Officer Randall Carrick for the shooting death of Jonathan Farrell. Hopefully, the new grand jury will return with a more appropriate decision. And certainly, there's an open invitation to the Farrell family or their representatives to appear here on Community Voices to share their thoughts and perspective on this issue. I'll also even invite Carrick's representatives to do the same, because of course we want to be fair. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. This show will be available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.